Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Pro Advocate Radio, brought to you by My Advocate Center.
And welcome to Pro Advocate Radio with your host, James O'Brien, and Deb Beacham, founder and owner of My Advocate Center. Deb, great to be back talking about the family court system. Tell us a little bit about My Advocate Center and what you guys are doing.
Good morning, James. We are focusing on conflict resolution. We see people not understanding what it means to enter into litigation, and they often think that they need to go through the court system to get problems solved. So we want people to take a step back, look at the professionals around them that might be able to help them resolve conflict in a safer, more efficient, cost-effective way. It's really about the needs of children. We see that the needs of children are not being served as well as they could be in this arena. So My Advocate Center was founded in 2011, and we've been putting out a lot of content about the needs of children and how parents can work together, work better together with each other within their family unit, and then with professionals, because we need professionals to guide us oftentimes in the psychological arena, around healthcare, financial, legal. So having this conversation about conflict, and sometimes it's not a very popular thing to get into around family conflict. You know, we want to stay away from family drama, but these are things we need to talk about. And we've been watching over the last 20 years, things getting a lot worse and seeing more fallout for families, and the whole family, but especially for the children. So this show today, we decided to kick it up a notch based on what we were seeing going on in the news and social media. And so that's how we got here today.
It right.
Just we're on a path to bring in good professionals that serve families. And when it came across my attention that we have a piece of legislation, because we're now in the 2015 Georgia legislative session, and when I saw the Atlanta Journal-Constitution talking about the religious liberty bill and that there was some conflict around that amongst professionals, I said, holy hot potato, we have to talk about this, because they're taking this issue into the court system and talking about the potential for a defense to be used, you know, in and around abuse situations. And anyway, I thought, okay, I need to do a little more research. And this does fit in with My Advocate Center's mission, because if families and children are not safe going through the court system, which that's what our data is showing, that there's a lot of increased risk and reduced protections, unfortunately, in the court system. So, you know, we're diving right into the heart of this is, you know, why is it less safe than we believe it is? So that's what prompted me to reach out to David Cook, who's here with us, DA from the Macon Judicial District, and to Pat Willis from Voices for Georgia's Children. So that's...
Well, and I look forward to hearing what they have to say, because anytime there's legislation coming up, sometimes the public face on it and the reality behind it are very different things. And we're going to get into some of that, maybe some misconceptions around what's going on with this bill. And Lord knows I don't know enough about it to talk about it, so we're going to turn it over to our guests. So why don't you bring them in, Deb?
Okay. So as we know, the policy arena is very important here. And while I've been spending time over the last few years at the Capitol, I've been getting to know different organizations, and the Voices for Georgia's Children has really stood out as the most clear and assertive voice for the needs of children in Georgia. So thank you for being here, Pat.
You're welcome.
And I'll let you do a little introduction, and have the same for David, and then I'm going to ask David to explain why he wrote this op-ed that really kicked up a firestorm here.
Well, thank you for having me. Voices for Georgia's Children is a public policy and advocacy organization focused on all children's issues. We do have an agenda where we focus primarily on early childhood, which is a great time to engage families in understanding child development and how to nurture and protect their children. We focus on child health, including mental health, which is often subject to the mental health of parents, and then on vulnerable and disconnected youth. We push these three agendas primarily, but at the Capitol, we also have to be cognizant of every piece of legislation that's coming through. And we want every legislator to ask the question, is it good for kids? What is the impact on children? So whether it's a transportation bill or a child-focused bill, we want to know what's the impact on children.
That's great. And I think the public really needs to understand your role, that you exist, because we need those kinds of watchdogs, you know, looking out for families and children. So thank you for what you do. And David.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. So I'm the elected district attorney for the Macon Judicial Circuit, and I'm a career prosecutor. I've been prosecuting since January 1997, so I just hit my 18th year anniversary. And for most of that, I've specialized. In fact, I just say this is my life's work. My life's work is prosecuting crimes against women and children, sex crimes, murder, different types of child abuse. And during my career, I spent a significant amount of time in Atlanta. I was a SVU and homicide prosecutor for Atlanta DA Paul Howard. And during that time, I developed an even further specialization in prosecuting child murder. There isn't one person who has all the child murders in Atlanta, in Fulton County, but there was a time when I had about all of them assigned to me. Just by virtue of the homicide experience I came to the office with, and then the expertise I developed while there. And so because of that, I've seen a lot of the worst that society has to offer. And through that experience and what I did as chief of the Special Victims Unit in Houston County, when my wife and I moved back to the Macon area, through all that I've seen, people know me as a person who will fight to keep children and our families safe. That's as I said, what I've made my life's work. And recently, someone brought this House Bill 29 to my attention. And when I saw it, I was floored. You know, here's a bill that by its name says it's to protect religious liberty. But as I read it, I saw a huge problem. And apparently the author of the bill realized that this bill could be used as a legal defense in criminal cases to simply claim that, hey, I'm doing this out of a sincerely held religious belief. This is my faith, and therefore I can't be prosecuted for this. And so they put in there a provision that said that nothing in this chapter shall be construed to provide a legal defense to the sexual abuse of a child. However, that's the only exception they put in there. And when you put that in there, then that means, okay, so I guess everything else is fair game. Everything else you can, you know, that's a common interpretation for statutory construction. You know, there is such a thing in how we as lawyers interpret the law and how judges rule from the bench. But to make it worse, right above the provision saying that it only applies to child sexual abuse is something that basically gives parents the right to discipline their children. And it says nothing can be construed to impair the fundamental right of every parent to control the care and custody of such parents' minor children, but it also talks about discipline and other matters. And when you read those two sections together, what it very much appears to be saying is, look, if you want to beat your kid as a part of your religious tradition, then have at it.
Or take away food, put them in a closet. Or, I mean, we could probably talk for an hour solid about real situations that are going on right here in our own backyard that could fall into this. So rather than going into a lot of detail there, because that's going to be a really tough conversation, but So we've looked at this bill from all sides. We've been talking about this. It's been written about widely. It was mentioned on television last night on a political show. And I'm getting the sense that some of this is kind of being glossed over, except for what you're saying and what I'm hearing from Voices for Georgia's Children.
Well, let me just speak up here as Voices. We don't pretend to be lawyers, and we appreciate when we have good lawyers and district attorneys to really address the needs of children. I think one thing that we can do is look at how we license prescribe standards for child care providers. And these are outside of the family, but we're pretty clear that there are standards of treating children that we expect of child care providers. And many of those things that David referenced and you referenced about how you discipline kids and beating them and so on would not be tolerated under the law in a licensed child care operation. And so we should ask ourselves, if we don't want caregivers to discipline in a way that might affect the health, both mental health and physical health of children, don't we have to be careful in what our expectations are of families?
Right. And careful is a really good word. And that's my position with any piece of legislation. And I think based on what you've been saying, David, and what's been written, that we need to use extreme caution and maybe we back off and study this and debate it a little further rather than just saying, you know what, we're all for religious liberty, so let's go to town with this bill. And I have, you know, this is not a political issue for me because I don't believe we should politicize the protection of children, you know, or defenses that are used in court cases.
I'd just add to that, we really believe that when people are elected to office, they are people of goodwill. They want to do right by their constituents, by children who are citizens, even though they can't vote. And so we like to approach every bill with an assumption that people want to do what's best for Georgia.
Yeah, so I'm glad we were able to bring the two of you together. You haven't met before today.
No,
right? I think this is the first time.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about what's being said and what you were explaining to me a little earlier about what's happening around this bill.
Well, obviously by you contacting me and not living in Macon, the news traveled farther than just than just the Macon circuit. After I wrote that op-ed, the AJC picked it up, and they began running stories about it. And then WABE, the local NPR affiliate in Atlanta, picked it up. And then it got picked up by Georgia Public Broadcasting. And I'm not sure if it went national, but I know people who don't listen to either of those stations who heard it on the radio. And then there were other commercial stations. And after a while, I lost count. But apparently this has struck a nerve. But I think what you have is the intersection of two things. You have the intersection of religious faith and child protection, two very volatile issues. And part of the reason why I wrote about this is that, and I didn't mention this in my introduction, but I also sit on the national board for the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty. And this is an organization that's existed for over eight decades. It's one of the most, honestly, I don't know why they have to sit on it, because it's one of the most respected religious organizations in our country. And I represent the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship on that board. And the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship is composed of millions of Baptists across the country. When people ask about it, I say, well, do you know Jimmy Carter? Okay, Jimmy Carter kind of Baptist. That's who I represent. Okay. So, but I represent them on the board along with a few others. And So religious liberty is extremely important to me. Every year I go to D.C. to meet with the other members of the board to go over the direction of the organization and review the cases that have been important. We receive regular updates. We correspond about issues related to religious liberty. You know, my wife and I are both deacons in our church. We actually met at that church, and we actually moved back to Macon to raise our kids at that church.
That's
so that,
nice.
So yeah. That's the center. That faith is the center of our lives.
Do you feel like this bill does anything to protect you around your faith?
I feel like it's completely unnecessary. We already have the First Amendment to the Constitution. And it was a Baptist who got that in there. John Leland, a Baptist pastor in Virginia, told James Madison that he wasn't going to back the ratification of the Constitution in Virginia unless he made some amendments, and he told him what the first one was going to be. And so it was a Baptist standing up for that, for why we even have a Constitution ratified to begin with.
Okay.
And that's the tradition I'm a part of. Well, looking at this bill, I don't see how it does anything that the Constitution, as applied to the states, you know, doesn't already do. I don't see the purpose of the bill. And to me, you know, there's other parts of it I'm not crazy about, but that's not why I wrote the op-ed.
Right. And you didn't write, it had nothing to do with the Atlanta Fire Chief story and his desire to express his religious beliefs. So I think we've had some, you know, current hot stories getting all roped into this issue around this bill. And I understand there's a lot of people passionate about religious liberty. So we want to help them understand why we need to slow this down and examine it more closely. And even I printed out the Georgia Faith Leaders Unite Against Discrimination. And whatever you want to discuss and debate around discrimination, let's set that aside to them, because that's not what this bill is about, correct?
For me, it's not. For me, what this bill is about is endangering children.
Right. So if this long list of faith leaders in Georgia could come out with this letter, you know, cautioning and saying, you know, instead of running with this bill, which opens wide the door for exclusion and division, instead they must preserve the current protections already afforded us through the Constitution. And that kind of said a lot to me that, you know, I looked to see if my pastor was on here. He's not. Right. I think he likes to stay out of politics. But
well, and real quick, let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Pro Advocate Radio with James O'Brien and Deb Beacham and our special guest, David Cook and Pat Willis, and we'll jump right back into the conversation.
So I wanted to invite our audience to, if you're sitting at your computer, go to the website georgiavoices.org. So www.georgiavoices.org. This is a great place to take a look at policy from years past and the current agenda to see what we're talking about and why. And if you're just joining the show, to understand why we have Pat Willis, the executive director of Voices for Georgia's Children, here with us. And the DA from the Macon Judicial District, we have a lot online about this story, and we'll be posting along with this show the link so that people can kind of get the backstory and can see the bill and can see. And I like the people that we're talking with around these issues. This is not for me, it's not a Republican issue or a Democrat issue. It's, you know, let's look at common sense. And I believe that they don't have the data and the case studies that we do, because I believe we're talking about some pretty good people, that if they understood what's going on that they can't see, that they would stop in their tracks the way we did when we saw this. I mean, I reacted the way you did. I was floored. I basically couldn't work the rest of the day because, like, no, we can't do this.
I think, like David said, for us, this is not a bill that we would get involved in from a religious liberty standpoint. That's, religious liberty is not an issue that we take a stand on.
Right.
We look at every bill relative to its impact on children. And, you know, I think about not just physical abuse, which we've referenced earlier, but even health care. And, you know, we have in our history, both in Georgia and nationally, a concern about whether children are receiving care that they need in order to survive and thrive. And in most cases, we have decided that the court will intervene to make sure that a child gets health care they need. We've also heard conversation in the past about a practice of female circumcision, which has some religious base to it, but which I believe, and David, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that we have taken a stand as a country that this is a practice that is physically not good for girls, and that we would protect girls that did not want to be circumcised. Is that correct?
Yes, and Pat, I'm glad you brought that up. And just let's be clear, I'm going to treat this as a family show and not be overly descriptive, but this is straight out genital mutilation. And people tend to think about this about as something that happens in Egypt or Ethiopia or some other country that has a cultural tradition of this. But there's actually been two cases in the Atlanta area where people were prosecuted for mutilating young girls within, you know, people who would hear this on the radio, it right. was in your county. That's what I'm telling you. Mm. And that happened here. And as you mentioned, there's a religious and cultural element to this where because this is not, that would, even though it's genital mutilation, it would not be considered a sex crime. It would be considered a physical abuse crime. Therefore, it would fall under this exception that motivated me to write this op-ed. And that those kinds of cases were in my mind when I wrote this. I mean, there were cases where they beat their children, said, you need to pray to this picture of Jesus. There were cases where, because of their strict veganism and, I believe, Wiccan beliefs, they only fed their child some sort of almond milk and the baby starved to death. We've had all kinds of cases like that here in the Atlanta area and throughout Georgia, and they've resulted in dead children.
So I'm going to step back as my advocate center and say, if this is happening in Atlanta and in Georgia, then chances are it's happening in other states.
Yes.
And these are things that we don't talk about. We don't hear about them. We don't get to hear about everything that's going on in your district and all the work that DAs and prosecutors are, the things that you see, and we don't hear about it unless the news media covers it, you know, or if somebody does get a conviction. So if we know about, I'm holding my hand up saying, if we know about this little bit, how much more is going on that we don't know about?
Exactly. And this is the other part too. First of all, you correctly hit on something. This is a nationwide issue. This bill didn't drop by itself. This same bill is pending in several states at the same time. This is not a localized thing.
Okay.
And these cases are also happening where the children die and are abused all over the country.
Correct.
So what you have is children endangered for the sake of what appears to be, and I'm not trying to impugn dishonest motives. I think, you know, as Pat said, I try to assume that the people who are filing these bills are doing so sincerely. But apparently that sincerity is contagious and has spread to other states who are also filing the same bill. Yet this child abuse is everywhere.
Right.
And if you look at this on balance, the religious liberty advocates, which include me, mm-hmm. were not all on the same page about this bill. Okay? But I haven't heard of a single child advocate who's in favor of this bill. In fact, they're all united saying, somebody's got to do something.
Okay.
This bill can't pass like it is.
So this is possibly just an opening conversation for us on this. And I'm looking at the intersection with family court and juvenile court. And I mean, we have a lot of systems and courts designed to protect and manage these issues. And we have agencies, and you know, we're having a conversation with DFACS now and with legislators about the data that we've been collecting for several years. I was with you know, a very well-known legislator, you know, a year or so, and she took me into the hallway and she said, you know, this is tough. And I said, yes, ma'am, I understand. And she said, bring me the data. And I said, I will. That's so we're going to have some follow-up conversations, since we don't have as much time today as we could probably use to go into this. I do want to touch on the cases that we're seeing where evidence is not being put on the record. It's not being used. You know, there may be an attorney trying to get the evidence on the record and they're being blocked, and law enforcement officers are being blocked from testifying, and forensic experts on cases where there's different forms of child abuse, like I said, I don't want to get too graphic, and there's material that is criminal material that they're trying to get onto the record and they're being blocked. Forensic experts I have watched been sent back out into the hallway when they've been deposed and they're ready to explain that, yes, this is illegal material in the context of a child abuse case. And when, if you have parents that are trying that hard to protect their children, and you have children making outcries, and you have substantiated reports of abuse, and you get into a court and it's that difficult to get the evidence on the record when everybody's trying really hard. And this, I'm actually referring to a pretty high profile case. I'm not going to name names. But it's still pending. The child is still endangered. The evidence has not made it onto the record yet. Law enforcement has been undermined, interfered with. Experts have been interfered with, intimidated. So if that's happening, then what else is happening in all these other cases? And I can answer that question. I don't ask a lot of questions I don't know the answer to on this show, but we have data going back. This is from Texas, going back into the 90s, 80s and 90s. This book came out in 2005. Actually, it's pretty beaten up because I found it on eBay, and it's called The Women of Court Watch. And it goes into these issues. So that's a really good book to look at history. And then going to in the early 2000s, this story, I'm holding up a pretty hefty book, which, as you can see, has some pretty graphic, you know, telling evidence preserved in the book. I would highly recommend everyone in law enforcement and in child advocacy get a copy of this book called Let My Children Go. It was written by Wendy Teitelman out of a Cobb County case. It involved law enforcement. I mean, really touched every corner of our society. And I'm going to just read you, and it's available on Amazon. I'm going to just read you them on the back cover. It says, this book is a must-read for anyone who cares about children and justice. This story is not unusual in the family courts across America. Children are being placed in the custody of their abusive parents, and their innocent, protecting parents are being removed from the children's lives. That is absolutely a true statement. I'm going to interject here before I read these other quotes on here. The same thing is happening to innocent parents who are being falsely accused. So what my Advocate Center does is we look at the mother and father's perspective, and we're finding that there are women being pursued and prosecuted for crimes they didn't commit when the actual abuser is the one using the abusive litigation to punish an innocent parent. And who suffers the most in that situation? The children. And either way, if you have a parent being punished for trying to protect their children, or a parent being punished, falsely accused, and even put in jail, where I'm coming in is I'm seeing across decades that there's evidence that could both protect the children and the victimized parent, and there's evidence that could exonerate an innocent parent, and a lot of that's getting lost. So we're going to come back to that more later, but I wanted to give you the context for why I'm reading this. Do I have one more minute to read
these? You have one more minute.
Okay. So these are three names that are really important. One is Dr. Paul J. Fink. He's a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and speaker, former president of the American Psychiatric Association, and founder and president of the Leadership Council for Mental Health, Justice, and the Media. And he says, "I strongly endorse that this is an important book for people to read because without a doubt, it provides an extensive demonstration of the corruption in the courts, particularly concerning women and children." So, David, what you're saying and what you've seen over time is that we really do need to step up and fight hard to have these cases adjudicated.
Right. And I think what's important, too, is that we make sure that we always implement best practices. That's why I help teach how to do best practices.
Awesome.
And have done so across the state for several years.
And I believe there are a lot of people who do their jobs like you do with that focus. And so we're going to be inviting more of them to come in here and talk. I'm going to get to these couple other quotes. Seth Goldstein is an attorney. He's also the executive director of the Child Abuse Forensic Institute. And keep in mind, this book was, you know, based on a 2000-2001 story here in Georgia. "Let My Children Go is a moving account of the failure of a system that is supposed to be protecting children. This mother's voice needs to be heard by as many people as possible. Every social worker, law enforcement investigator, judge, custody evaluator, family court investigator, child's attorney, and family lawyer in the country should receive a copy of this book in order that they must see firsthand the results of system failure." And this is my interpretation as a layperson, that adding in a defense, a loophole around, you know, claiming religious freedom, and I'm a Christian, I'm reacting the same way you are, David, to this. So last quote, the Honorable Saul Gothard, I'm not sure if he's retired yet or not, and I'm going to be checking as soon as we get off the air. I've seen him quoted in a number of places around the country on stories. He's from the Louisiana Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal as of the date of this book. There are very few times in law, and this is Judge Gothard, there are very few times in law when you can state anything categorically, but I can certainly say that beyond any doubt whatsoever, the problem expressed by Wendy Tidelman in this book is epidemic and widespread. In the judicial field, it is so alarming to see so many judges uninformed or misinformed that would rely on such nonsense as this. There's a defense that is used across the country to, it's hard to even say this, it's a defense that faults the parent trying to protect the children and enables and supports the alleged abuser. And it's happening all over in every county, and we have hundreds of cases in Georgia that demonstrate this. So, okay.
Yep. Well, I just want to remind our listeners, they're listening to Pro Advocate Radio with James O'Brien and Deb Beecham, our special guests, David Cook and Pat Willis. And before you get back in, Deb, David, one of the things that they're using in this House bill, intentional, unintentional, and we can assume that good intentions were behind this, but it's been widely quoted, good intentions have paved the road to hell many times. The reality is they're using religious freedom and the thought that nobody wants Big Brother in their home to kind of put the public face on this bill. But that's really, one, it's offering a protection we really don't need, we already have. And two, it really, when you look at it, isn't so much a religious issue with this bill.
I really don't feel like we need this to protect our faith. You know, I drove a church van for our choir last weekend. Like I said, my family life is focused around our church involvement. And we just don't need this bill. We don't need it. And there's so many people opposed to it for a variety of reasons. You know, I've stayed out of the other reasons, but it says something to me that every major corporation in town thinks this bill's a bad idea. And that's before you even get to the reason why I weighed in,
right,
which is it endangers the children.
Right. It's about the children. It just so happens that we're at Business Radio X producing this show, and we know that the business community, corporations are paying attention to what we're doing because family conflict touches every corner of our society, including corporations. So to be able to have a conversation with the corporate community, business community, small business, large, about what's happening to children and why they should step up and spend some time on this. We're very fortunate and we're blessed, David. I grew up in a Christian school, went to a Christian college. It has nothing to do with why I'm protecting children. This is just the right thing to do. I'm going to interject related to this book, since I brought up Wendy Titelman, and we're talking about religious liberty. This mother was faulted for her faith. They could find nothing wrong with her. They would not let her protect her children and faulted her for her faith. And when I discovered this after my own case was over and it was too late for me to use this information to help my children and Mike in my situation. And, you know, I didn't have anything like this. I'm just be clear. But it was how the professionals handled the information in the case and handled the process and handled the parties, you know, how the parties are being treated by the professionals who control the litigation, the court system. That's where my problem lies. And if you can take someone who's such a good mother, obviously a good person who's doing the right thing and trying to protect her children and restrain her. And by the way, she hasn't seen her children in many years and has been paying child support for children she can't see and has no rights to. So we do care a lot about our religious freedoms, our freedom to live our lives how we choose, as long as we're not doing harm to other people. And we care, good gracious, I'm speaking out all over the place about things that are important to me. And I totally appreciate my freedom to speak and write as I do. And
Deb, I wanted to speak just a moment.
Yes.
You had mentioned there's a defense that attorneys are using. And that brings to mind that our whole attitude towards families generally as a society, I think, needs to be examined, because we see so many actions that really don't credit parents with wanting the best thing for their kids or caring about their kids. And as you look deeper and you find that parent or that family has economic problems, they have health problems. And yet our focus on the child doesn't respect the fact that that child is part of a family. And I think as a community, we need to really step up to recognize that we can support families in supporting their children. There is a national movement called Strengthening Families, which talks about the protective factors that families need in order to be good parents. And those are things like parents understanding child development, so that, you know, when a baby is 18 months old and driving you crazy, you recognize that's okay. And, you know, I may need some friends to help me get through this,
right,
but it's okay. You know, parents, families need to be resilient. They need to have friends around them to keep them sane at times. They need access to resources, whether it's healthcare or whatever. And so I would just encourage us to really commit to, in our training of professionals, whether they're attorneys or judges or DFACS workers, to really help everybody understand that we can help this child by helping their family.
Excellent. And with your permission, I think I'd like to replay this segment over and over and over again. This is really good. Thank you. Yeah, this is why we're here. And that's exactly the message we want everyone to hear across each community, across the state, across the country. So thank you.
Well, and we do want to thank you both for being here today. We're unfortunately starting to run out of time. Pat, if you'll give us the contact information for Voices of Georgia.
Yes, if you want to see our website, go to www.georgiavoices.org. And if you're a Facebook person, go to facebook.com/Georgia Voices. And our Twitter handle is @Georgia Voices.
And I love the people who do your social media and just do an excellent job. And it makes my job easier in sharing these good messages. They're positive, uplifting, informative, and that's what we need. And so,
thank you. And one thing, when you go on our website, if you sign up for information from us, we do a weekly update on all legislation related to children. And we're always watchful for the best timing to connect with your legislator to let them know that you have a certain position on a bill, and we give you the information and background on those bills.
And what is Polly's new segment called?
Our advocacy director does a little video. It's her 2-minute take. And in addition to a very extensive printed update of what's going on at the Capitol.
Right. We love 2-minute takes, so we'll be watching out for that.
And David Cook, District Attorney for the Macon Judicial Circuit, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, glad to be here. Thank you so much for all that you do.
And Deb, another great show. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, James.
This show is brought to you by My Advocate Center, the voice for families and family law advocates. Learn more at myadvocatecenter.com.